This is Hearts of Oak podcast. Free speech, religious disagreement, children's rights, and open and free discussion on any topic are bedrock to a democratic free society, and we seek to promote and champion these basic rights. Join us. Let's keep the conversation going.
And I'm delighted to have Dr. Sebastian Gorka back with us again. Dr. Gorka, thank you for your time today.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Great to have you on. And of course, former Deputy Assistant to President, nationally syndicated radio host of America First with Sebastian Gorka, and best-selling author. And people can find you, obviously, at Seb Gorka. And we'll get into some of your thoughts on your Twitter page in a little bit. But Dr. Gorka, if I can ask you, maybe first, looking at the GOP, back at the beginning of President Trump's first term in office, he trusts the GOP to fill those, I guess, 3,000-odd positions to keep the system running. And he seems to, I think everyone seems to have learned that there was a concerted effort to push back. But it seems to be that that the president has realized he needs to fill those positions himself. And there's a concerted effort to fill those positions with the brightest, the best patriots that America have. Do you want to just let us know about that? Because he is going into this with his eyes wide open.
Well, absolutely. After what they did to him and to his administration the first time around. And this is my greatest concern going forward, because it is clear the American people want him back. He's trouncing Biden in the polls. If you look at the primary results, we haven't even finished the primaries, and he's already broken his record for 2016. So whether it's wars across the world, the state of the economy, 16 million illegals, President Trump, if there is a free and fair election, will be, God willing, if we do our part, the next president. However, as Ronald Reagan taught us, politics, you know, personnel is politics. And I am very concerned that we not have what we had last time, which is even at the cabinet level, subversives in the Trump administration. So we can't make that mistake again. However, I give credit to the left. My friend Chris Plant, who has the morning show here in DC, has made this point very eloquently over the years. Why would a decent person, especially a family man or a family woman, why would you work in a Republican administration, especially a Trump administration? You look at my example. Look, I don't mind getting attacked by the left because, of course, I'm a proxy for the president. But when they came after my wife, I had one journalist write 52 hit pieces on me in 3 months. And when one of the articles named my 18-year-old son and called him a traitor in the headline, what person wants to actually put up with it? I mean, I'm prepared to do it again. And there's a handful of us who served in the Trump administration who understand America First, who are loyal to the president, who are loyal to, you know, the mandate he received already, are prepared to do it again. But there are 4,000 positions, 4,000 presidential appointees. What lunatic is prepared to have the inhuman treatment meted out against them from a quote-unquote elite and a media that just dehumanizes? I mean, from Hillary's deplorables comment to Biden last year standing in front of one of the most important buildings in the world for us when it comes to American history, which is Independence Hall, bathed in red light, flanked by two Marines in their dress blues, and he calls half the nation fascists, MAGA extremists. I mean, this is how radical the left has become and how they've dehumanized the other. So, yeah, I mean, you've hit upon my neuralgic point, which is the personnel policy, if we win, God willing, of a second Trump administration. We cannot get it wrong this time. We just cannot get it wrong.
Well, it does seem that the left are utterly vicious and ruthless in going after individuals. And I had the privilege of watching the president speak twice when it was over last in Pennsylvania and then down South Carolina. And it's an hour and 40 minutes of a political speech I've never seen before. And I've been involved in politics in many years in the UK, but it connects you at a heart level as opposed to the head level. And he knocks off those attacks, but the left are adamant that they will go after individuals.
Let me give you one concrete example, lest you know your listeners and viewers think this is just, you know, Sebastian Gorka's axe that he's grinding. So I had a colleague. I was deputy assistant to the president. My colleague Peter Navarro was assistant to the president for trade policy. He was one of the key architects of our China policy. Peter was subpoenaed by the infamous January 6th committee of Congress, which was illegally constituted. So an investigatory, I don't want to get into the weeds, but an investigatory committee of Congress has to have delegates from both parties. It can't just be the majority party. Nancy Pelosi refused, as then Speaker, to accept nominations from the Republican Party. So she picked a couple of the worst Trump haters who are nominal Republicans, Liz Cheney and Adam Kinzinger. And as such, this was an illegally constituted committee. Peter Navarro receives a subpoena from this congressional committee ordering him to come and testify. He says, A, it's an illegal committee. I'm not going to comply. B, I have it in writing from President Trump that my work for him is covered by the executive privilege, which is a constitutional statute in America that, you know, the discussions between the president and his aides are protected and they can't just be just willy-nilly divulged to anybody. Peter lives one block away from the FBI. When he was in contempt of this subpoena, which is a misdemeanor offense, not a felony, it's a misdemeanor, instead of the FBI writing to Peter or writing to his, you know, lawyer, could your client come to our offices tomorrow morning and we'd like to present him with, you know, his breach of congressional subpoena documents? Instead, my colleague, a renowned economist, academic professor, was tracked by the FBI to Reagan Airport, which is, you know, the airport for Washington, D.C. And after he boarded a plane on a business trip, he was arrested in public, not only handcuffed. This is when you realize we are in a police state. And I say that with all sincerity. He was handcuffed and put in leg shackles, which meant he had to shuffle out of the airport like some, you know, slave on a chain gang. Then he was taken to the FBI headquarters, where he was strip searched on a congressional misdemeanor charge. He is now sitting, as of 2 weeks ago, he is sitting in a federal prison in Florida, serving a four-month sentence for being in contempt of Congress. So, you know, this is the left. This is the left. They talk about President Trump and MAGA is a threat to democracy. Well, the only fascists I see right now are the Democrat Party, Biden's DOJ, and the FBI. A woman, I had her daughter literally text me on Friday, said, my 73-year-old grandmother, who spent 10 minutes inside Congress praying for the nation on January 6th, has just been charged with four charges that will lead her to spend a year in prison. A 73-year-old grandma, who's going to be on my radio today, has been charged with being inside of Congress and praying, Peter.
Yeah, I've seen the praying grandma. I've seen a number of clips of her. And Peter's book, Taking Back Trump's America, certainly was an eye-opener for me, and I learned a lot reading that. And, of course, we've had some of the anniversaries of the J6ers. You know, Jake Lang's now fourth anniversary of him in jail. I mean, what does that mean? How do you see, God willing, President Trump winning the election, well, not winning, but allowed to win the election in November? What does that mean for instance, some of those J6ers in jail, hundreds of them in jail for years and years, simply for going and being part of that event?
Well, the president has said this openly just last week. I was with him at Mar-a-Lago, and he said it the week before. All the J6ers who committed no violent crimes, who simply walked through the halls, through the velvet rope, every single one, all the cases will be reviewed and the president will pardon them.
Wow. Wow. That's simple and decisive. And it's just what you'd expect from Trump as opposed to Biden. It's like, well, here's the job, let's get it done.
I mean, this is, you know, We could talk about this for hours. This is how he functions. I mean, you don't get to be the most successful entrepreneur in the hardest market in the world, which is Manhattan real estate. You don't have the most successful TV show for 14 seasons in a row unless you're decisive. And I saw this in the White House. You know, when we made the argument, the Iran deal, Obama's Iran deal, is bad for America, bad for Israel, bad for the Middle East, and actually gives the mullahs a bomb. He said, "Okay, we're canceling it." He didn't waffle. He didn't say, "Oh, let's create a task force or let's have a conference in Vienna." He said, "No, we're going to kill it now."
Absolutely. Here, can I ask you about the RNC? Because I've looked at this and the media have billed it as Trump taking charge, taking control of the RNC, which seemed to be one of the biggest pushbacks to his presidency, certainly at the beginning with all those appointments. It's now a very different situation with a lot of good people put in. What does that takeover mean? And does that mean that actually moving past November, that he will be in a very different situation?
Well, it's massively significant. I mean, I said this when I was in the White House. I said it when I left the White House. Donald John Trump won the election despite the Republican Party, not thanks to the Republican Party. The Republican Party hates him. I mean, it's the same as, you know, Brexit and the Tories. It's the same as, you know, establishment politicians and Milei or Maloney. We have these establishment. Look, I think Bannon popularized it here. We have the Uniparty. There's really not much difference between this amorphous blob that is the Democrats and the establishment Republicans. Why? Because the Democrats are lunatics who hate America, and the establishment Republicans, we call them rhinos, Republicans in name only, are cuckolds who just facilitate what the left does and never push back even when they're in majority. And they hate President Trump. I mean, they to this day, the likes of Mitch McConnell and you know, Mitt Romney think that 64 million Americans voting for a man who'd never run for political office before and him becoming president, they think that's an anomaly. They think that's, oh, just a blip and we'll get back to business and footsie under the table with the Democrats. They have no comprehension of the global phenomenon that is populism. From Brexit to Modi to Maloney to Orban to Milei, you know, to Bolsonaro, there is a wholehearted international rejection of what a friend of mine called on my show recently, and I literally just wrote an article on this for my Substack, the unaccountables. It's not left and right anymore. We've got to ditch that taxonomy. It's not even conservative and liberal. It is the unaccountable elites who are completely cosseted and insulated from anything in the real world. The price of petrol doesn't affect them. They think, you know, a 6 quid almond latte from Starbucks is a good deal. And they don't give a crap whether manufacturing jobs have been shipped over to China or Mexico. You know, as long as the Wi-Fi signal in Starbucks is good, they can do their job as, you know, chief DEI officer or you know, head of HR for some woke corporation. And then there's the rest of us, the accountables, who, you know, the plumber who, when the price of petrol goes up 300% under Joe Biden, you can't put food on the table for your kids. Or you're the legal immigrant who came here from Mexico 10 years ago, got in line, took the exam, paid the money, and you're a waiter in Dallas, and along comes this Nigerian illegal, one of the 16 million let in by Biden, who tells the boss of that cafe, "I'll do Jose's job for cash for 50% of what Jose's doing." I mean, these are the people who pay the price of the betrayal of the people who build America, betrayed by the Democrats and their enablers in the Republican Party. So, yeah, that's where we are today. And Laura Trump becoming the co-chair, the firing of Rona Romney McDaniel. Okay, so let's be clear here. The chair of the RNC, the National Committee, was Mitt Romney, one of the biggest rhino Trump haters, niece. And her loss of 8 elections in a row had to have some consequences. Now Lara's in charge. They've hired Scott Pressler, a friend of mine, who's one of the best grassroots activists in America. And finally, you know, the choice of the people will be reflected in the party that is supposed to be his party. So to put it, you know, very briefly, the Republican Party will finally be a MAGA America First party.
All right. I saw one of your shows recently. I think it was Scott saying maybe it should be renamed America First instead of the GOP.
That was actually my associate producer talking in my ear. He wants me to shut up about that because he wants President Trump to drop that at the convention. I think it's right. Why shouldn't we be called the grand old party? I mean, we're not in the 19th century, right? I mean, let's have something that reflects the will of the American people.
No, and I watched that interview with Scott, and that's exciting to bring in a different generation, actually have different ideas, and someone who's done the groundwork for 10 years really should be rewarded with a position to roll out what he's doing in an area actually nationwide. So it's exciting to see that, I guess, the boldness that Trump changing the RNC now can have for going forward.
Yeah. The proof of the pudding will be the convention. The proof of the pudding will be the results. But we're seeing some incredible. I mean, look, it's a little bit arcane and only relevant to American politics. But we have this primary system where state by state you choose the candidate to lead the party for the election. And I know New Hampshire very, very well. New Hampshire is not an America First state. It used to be conservative. Now a lot of hippies and, you know, idiots have moved in. The record for primary votes, for the most votes ever cast in a primary, is held by Bernie Sanders. That tells you just how, you know, woke a state it has become. President Trump broke Bernie Sanders' standing primary record in New Hampshire this year. I mean, these things are unprecedented. The fact that he, you know, as of last week, he's had more people vote for him in primaries than voted for him in the whole primary season in 2016. I think there's a grand awakening. And if only 60, 70% of the reports are true about the Hispanic and Black vote, according to the polls, the president now enjoys the majority of Hispanic votes in America. Now, that's just mind-blowing. The man who we've been told by the establishment media is the racist, bigoted, you know, yada, yada, yada. He's more popular with Hispanic Americans. And I don't want to, you know, tempt fate. He's getting upwards of 28, 30% of the Black vote. If that preference translates into actual ballots on November the 5th, the Democrat Party will implode. I mean, they've had a lock for absurd reasons. They've had a lock on the Black vote for 70 years. The party that, you know, created the KKK, the party that was the party of Southern segregation and plantations, has had a lock on that vote forever. And if 20, 30% of them leave, that's it. There will be a crisis in the Democrat Party, and it will be long overdue.
Yeah, I'm seeing that breakaway from that tribal politics, how your parents voted, to actually voting with your gut and your conviction,
yeah,
which could be a massive change.
Yeah.
Does Trump actually need to do debates head-to-head? Obviously, he pulled out of the one through the Republican field because he said, what's the point, and did his own. And that was genius and pure Trump. But actually, going head-to-head with Biden, what is the point? He's so far ahead in the polls. How do you think he will play it? Because then you fit into the CNN, MSNBC, you fit in the Fox News, you fit into their schedules, and he doesn't need to do that.
Well, no, he doesn't need to, because it's, you know, they're both known quantities. They've both been presidents, one the most successful president of the modern era, biggest economy we've ever had, no wars for 4 years, crushed ISIS, stock market rallies literally every other day. I had to watch the ticker tape in my studio because there was a new stock market rally, which isn't just for the, you know, fat cats. Your pension is tied to that stock market. So people's 401k pensions were like blossoming. And then we've had what? We've had Biden, record inflation, petrol got up to $7 a gallon in California. You've got the invasion of Russia, the invasion of Ukraine, the surrender of Afghanistan, war in the Middle East. So it really should be a very stark binary option. So do you need a debate? Not really, but President Trump's great troll comment last week that, yeah, we should have a debate as long as Biden is drug tested, because they found a bag of cocaine in the White House, which the Secret Service mystically couldn't find any fingerprints on, despite a bag of cocaine being the perfect thing to find fingerprints on, because it's not porous. It's absolutely like a sheet of glass that's plastic, right? They definitely pumped him full of something for the State of the Union, because this is a guy who is not compos mentis. This is a guy who doesn't function. And then, you know, he actually ranted like a lunatic, like on speed or something, for an hour during the State of the Union. So it was the perfect troll. Will there be a debate? I doubt it. I doubt they'd let Biden debate with President Trump. But, you know, who knows? Politics has been pretty weird for the last 10 years in America.
Earlier, you mentioned about some of the populism and across Europe, also in Bolsonaro in Brazil. And we're obviously having the European parliamentary elections coming up in June with a massive rise in populism. And you understand this as a Brit, as someone who's Hungarian roots and studied in Hungary, and now you're an American citizen. You've got quite a unique perspective and view on this. And I'm wondering how, because with Trump going into the White House, having an open and possible a very good relationship with Europe, which wasn't there in the first place, I'm kind of sitting back intrigued watching how this will play out, because this could be a new, very strong relationship linking Europe and the US.
Well, it could. It just depends, you know, who wins the elections in Europe, right? I mean, if it's the right people like Meloni in Italy, absolutely. If it's the wrong people like the socialists that trounce truth and justice in Poland, then, you know, it'll be a different kind of relationship. Look, people need to understand the president has a very strong, you know, soft spot in his heart for Europe because of his family background. But just go back to that video, if your viewers haven't seen it. Go back to the video when the president spoke at the United Nations General Assembly, long before Biden and the invasion of Ukraine. And he said, very declaratively said, by way of wanting to help, he said, Germany, Europe, why are you buying energy from Russia? It makes you dependent on a dictatorial regime that has military goals against NATO members or border countries. And then the camera panned from the president warning Europe not to do that to the German delegation. And the German delegation was tittering and giggling, saying, what does he know about geopolitics? Well, isn't it funny that, you know, when we leave the office, Vlad does what he did, puts a stranglehold on the energy of the Baltic states, Hungary, the Ukraine, and then Germany has to literally do a 180 and say, oh, we like nuclear energy now, and we're going to stop shutting down our nuclear energy plants. So, you know, which part of Europe are we talking about? The unaccountable asshole elites who are arrogant and don't give a fig for the people? Or are we talking about politicians like Nigel Farage who understand that the political elite has been roundly rejected by the people of Europe? That's what will affect relations. Who's in charge? Are they the Karl Schwab fanboys and fangirls, or are they people who believe in the sovereignty of their own individual nations?
Well, it could be rewritten with AfD in Germany and Freedom Party in Austria. And
yeah, but look at the UK. The UK is a disaster. I was just talking to, I was with Steve Hilton yesterday in California, and I'm like, you know, this is a guy who worked in 10 Downing Street. And I said to him, so what is it with the Tory party? And he can't even explain it to me. How does, he said, Sunak is just so wet, so pathetic. And this is the best, of, you know, the UK can do. So, you know, Nigel, get busy.
100%. It's depressing looking at every other green shoot across Europe and looking at the UK and having zero. But yeah, I know Nigel is seriously considering his political future. But he's involved in media. And I want to ask you about media. Nigel, of course, very involved in media and in GB News, probably the star on GB News. And in the States, I think it was an Axios article a few weeks ago talking about a MAGA media juggernaut that seems to eclipse, no pun intended for today, but eclipse any influence that Fox ever had. You're right in the center of that, as is Bannon, Charlie Kirk. I mean, the list is wide of the names of individuals who have stepped up to the mark and helped the public understand. Tell us about that, because to me, that will be part of winning this war and getting the message out over the next 6 months.
Well, when it comes to the media, there's only one, you know, mass media platform that conservatives control, and that is, of course, talk radio. The left has tried talk radio, and it's always vituperative and bile-filled, and nobody can listen to it for more than 3 minutes. When I mean, my show's only 5 years old. I've got 3.5 million daily listeners. You look at, you know, the Rush Limbaugh slot that is now divided between Dan Bongino and a couple of other hosts, Buck Sexton and his partner. And Rush was getting 20, 22, 23 million people listening. Fox doesn't even do that. I mean, before Tucker left, Tucker had the most popular show, and on a good night, that was 5 million, which tells you, you know, why television is kind of irrelevant. I mean, 5 million in a nation of 340 million, and radio is multiples of that. Now, since then, of course, we have what? In the last few years, the rise of the Breitbarts, Newsmax doing incredibly successfully, pushing Fox out. But, you know, the hope, I don't know if he can pull it off. The renaming was the dumbest thing ever. But Elon's buying of Twitter, I mean, he's been very open about it. He wants to make Twitter the multimedia platform. He wants it to be the Twitter, YouTube, Google, Spotify, all-in-one information platform. And we'll see what happens with, you know, the next thing is going to be video, long-form videos on that platform. God willing, power to his elbow, absolutely do it. And then President Trump, I don't know how the left failed to sabotage him, but with the SEC giving him permission to have that merger of the Truth Social and the SPAC on the stock exchange, President Trump, you know, just affected a, what was it, $8 billion deal. And I mean, I don't try a lot. I mean, I put my segments from my radio show on Truth Social, and then I kind of cut and paste whatever I'm putting on Twitter on Truth Social. So I'm not, you know, really working on Trump's platform. And without trying, I got 900,000 followers. Now, that tells you, you know, and this is a free speech platform that's not full of, you know, bots that are being generated for political purposes. This is a true, you know, free speech platform in accordance with the First Amendment. So I don't have a crystal ball, but the media environment is being shook up something fabulous. You look at how wokeism, I mean, you look at what wokeism has done to the likes of Netflix and HBO, and along comes Angel Studios with, you know, The Call of Freedom and mega series on Jesus, that reinterpretation of Jesus.
Chosen,
yeah. This is like a boiling cauldron of things that are forming and shaping, and it's going to be, I mean, look, I'm not a fan of Tucker. Tucker's become a clickbait animal, in my opinion. But the figures he's getting for his videos, that presages something very interesting for the future.
It's funny when the left think they've got rid of a problem like Trump, like Tucker, and they come back to haunt them. I love it.
Oh, and I love it when they say, oh my gosh, President Trump's running out of money, and then the SPAC merger is approved, and he garners $4 billion himself from that deal. It's like, oh my gosh, Biden and Obama and Clinton, they're so cool. They had a fundraiser in Manhattan last weekend, and they raised $25 million. And President Trump had a fundraiser by himself this weekend and raised $50 million. You gotta laugh.
You do. You gotta laugh. Read the headline. There was a Guardian hippies think on the RNC takeover saying, oh, well, you know, it hasn't gone as planned. You're thinking, well, actually, he's taken over the apparatus, the party machine. And actually, it's going to take a little bit of time to get smooth running when you're taking right. over. But it was the headline was anti. And then you read and you think, wow, that's bloody good.
Well, it's at the tactical level. So my wife, who hates politics because she's sane, she because they had it's a long story, but there was a drag queen story hour at our local community center that provoked her to run for the board of that community center. Then she became an election officer because she was worried about the integrity of the election. So she became the chief election officer for our part of Virginia. And then on Saturday, because she's fed up with we are in the richest county in Virginia. It's the second richest county in America. And it's run by, you know, the rhino class at the RNC, you know, under Rona, used us as a piggy bank. They took all the money from Fairfax County, and then they never gave any money back to our candidates. So my wife was convinced to run for the chair of the GOP in Fairfax County. And I thought, oh my gosh. I mean, she never mentioned my name once. She didn't mention in any of her campaign, promotional material. She trounced, it was a primary to other candidates. She defeated the second placed loser by 40 points on Saturday. And then, you know, the hit pieces, oh my gosh, MAGA, you know, wife of Trump takes over GOP. It's like, you know, that's how democracy works. When 68% of the delegates, 68 said, yeah, we want her. It's so weird how the left really hates the will of the American people now.
But that's what's about. That it's about winning. And it's easy in some ways to say, let's all move to West Virginia and get an area of freedom. But actually to stay and fight, that's what's right. difficult. And that's what's required to win.
Right. It's like... who's that guy who wrote Liberal Fascists, that conservative who went lunatic, anti-Trumper? There's this, I can't believe he actually said it live on television. He's become, you know, the quasi Republican on CNN. And here it's Jonah Goldberg. Jonah Goldberg was, you know, bashing Trump again on CNN or whatever. And he actually said out loud, you know, all these small donors that President Trump is getting, it's a real problem because they don't understand the world. And it should be the policies of the mega donors wow. that shape the Republican Party. I say, Jonah, did these words just come out of your mouth that the plebs are stupid? How dare the people's desires, like wanting to have a border and jobs in manufacturing, how dare leave it up to the billionaires because they really care about America. Jonah Goldberg actually said that live on television. And he didn't apologize. He didn't catch himself and say, oops, I said the quiet bit out loud. These people believe it. Peter, they believe it. How dare the American people vote for Donald Trump? How dare they?
No, and I've seen a number of your tweets and you've been pointing that out, Biden at war, not with America's enemies, but with America itself. And America last, you put comments said war on Christians, it's war on our children, war on free speech.
Think of this. I was speaking in front of about 1,000 conservatives yesterday in California. And I think this is, so to diagnose the situation, we live in the most perverse of ages because never before has a society or a civilization been run by those who hate their own country. I mean, Obama said it. He said, I wish to radically transform, fundamentally transform America. Well, you don't love anything that you wish to radically transform. And it sounds extreme, but look at what just happened. The federal government, whose number one duty is the safety of our citizens, that's its number one thing, is now suing the governor of Texas because he deployed his National Guard elements to put container boxes along the border to stop it. No, the feds were letting in the illegals, 10,000 a day, and the governor, you know, Abbott said, okay, well, I got to do something because I'm responsible for the citizens of my state of Texas. In the Texas Constitution, it says he must secure his state if there is an invasion. So he moved the Connex, you know, boxes to just put a barrier along the Texan border. Biden is suing Texas for trying to secure the territory of America. It's like, that's when you realize these people truly hate their own country and hate their own people.
100%. And that's what seems to be the big two issues are the border and the economy. There are many other issues, but I guess those two are simple election. But then when the election is won, you've got you've got a whole litany of issues that then need to be sorted out.
Well, yes. I mean, here's the massive irony. I'm going to write a piece on this today or tomorrow that this is the delightful thing about the left. They're evil bastards. They hate Judeo-Christian civilization, but they're really quite stupid. Why did Donald Trump win in 2016? If you have to boil it down to one univalent answer, he won because of illegal immigration. I mean, the most powerful mobilizing slogan of 2016 was build the wall. I mean, that really was, if you had to choose one, it was build the wall. What have they just done in the last 3.5 years? If there's one issue, if you know you're running against him again, what's the one issue, Peter, you shouldn't give to Donald Trump a second time round? You probably shouldn't give him the issue he won on the first time. You probably shouldn't give immigration back to him as a weapon. And they haven't given it back to him as a weapon. They've given it back to him as a nuclear, you know, bomb. When you let in 10,000 illegals a day, and there's this guy who actually sealed the border 8 years ago, you're actually re-electing Donald Trump on the same issue that you helped him to get elected on the first time. These people are cretins. I mean, they really are cretins.
Oh, completely. Can I just finish off on education? Because it was your wonderful Oxford Union speech, we think it was the beginning of this year, and it was Bastian Gorka explains why America and the world needs President Trump back in office. And you realize this is a battle for education, for the next generation, for children to actually rediscover the American dream that their parents fought for and strived for. But me just tell, what was that like going into an arena where you are hated because you stand up for the best of a country itself? And then what are your thoughts on actually it is about reclaiming the education system?
Well, look, I thought twice about it because it's got to be as, you know, a heart of darkness when it comes to wokeism, but I've got to give them full credit. I mean, really, it's not part of the university, but it's affiliated to it and it's run by the students of Oxford. So, and look, when the Oxford Union invites you to debate on any subject, you have to go. When you see the photographs of Einstein, Maggie Thatcher, Ronald Reagan, who've all, you know, debated in that beautiful building, you don't say, well, sorry, I'm not, you know, I'm too good for that. And so they believe, you may not have it in the, you know, the British system, but they believe in, you know, a First Amendment and freedom of speech. And I'm just absolutely stunned that I had 120, 130 students vote for President Trump after I gave my speech. Wow. But let me tell you a story. So it's run by this committee who, interestingly, are mostly classic scholars. So the dinner beforehand was, you know, debating the Pliny versus Tacitus. It was. I felt like I didn't, arrived in some Evelyn Waugh novel. It was quite funny. But one of the, because you can only go and listen if you're a member of the union. One of these students, after I gave my pitch, he stood up, took the microphone, and he was a perfect exemplar of what we face. And he said, in front of hundreds of people, I mean, it was a packed crowd, standing room only, and I've literally just given my speech, and I've traveled, 8,000 miles on my own dime. And he says, I hate you and everything your former boss stood for. And I'm an American. He was like an exchange student or whatever. And he said, I would rather vote for a dead twig than to vote for President Trump. And I accosted him afterwards over the little, cocktails we were having. And I said to him, you do realize how privileged you are, that you're an American at Oxford, and you really shouldn't dehumanize other people. And to say in public that you hate a man you've never met before, and you'd rather vote for a piece of wood than a human being, you're actually dehumanizing at the level that the Nazis dehumanized somebody they politically disagreed with. And then, to his credit, he apologized. He said, yes, you're right. And then literally 40 seconds later, he did it again. And he made an ad hominem attack against me in front of witnesses as we're drinking, and he just, the level of indoctrination is stunning. And I had the president of the Heritage Foundation on my radio show the week he was appointed. And he's a former president of a college in Texas. He's a fourth generation educator, PhD in history. And my wife, who worked for Heritage at the time, smuggled me a question to ask him at the end of the hour. And I said, so, Dr. Roberts, it's exciting to see Americans take back the schools, the mama bears rising up against the insane COVID mandates, the masks, the CRT, all this garbage. That's cool, but what about higher ed? What about the colleges? What about the universities? You've run one of these. Can we salvage them? Can we rebuild them? Live on air in front of 3.5 million people, he said, it's a brand newly minted president of the Heritage Foundation. No, we have to burn them to the ground. Now, when he says that, you think, let me think about that. And then what happens? 3 years later, the president of the most famous college in the world says, genocide of the Jews, that's a contextual statement and may not be hate-filled. Then he's right. I mean, I've got in an argument about this with a fellow conservative who said, well, we've got to save the colleges. I said, you can't save that. I mean, when it's so ingrained that calling for genocide on Harvard campus is something the president thinks is okay, you can't change that unless you change everybody who works at Harvard, because they're all like that. I mean, maybe there's two professors left who aren't woke, but you can't build it with thousands of people who hate America. It's like, let me make an analogy that you're not supposed to say. It's in politic. People, my thing is national security, and people tell me, well, Israel has to do what it has to do, and it has to crush, Hamas, and then it'll be okay, and they have to do whatever it takes. Civilian casualties, yes, we get it, but they just got to crush Hamas. And I say, you can't crush Hamas. The polls say 70 to 80% of Gazans support what Hamas did on October 7th. When 70% of a population says murdering beautiful young women at a rave in the desert is okay, that's not unless the population is removed somewhere else, and Egypt built their wall with God. You cannot fix that by killing the people who did October 7th, because you'll just find more recruits. You can't fix these colleges. That's why homeschooling is enormous, why Hillsdale and the like of Grove City, conservative colleges that don't take 1 cent from the feds, so the feds can't force their CRT and equal rights garbage on them, you know, are so thriving. But you know, my parents escaped communism, and it's the idea that we're in that situation where in every communist nation that had a semblance of resistance, the kids would come home from school, and then the parents would put the radio up loud and then deprogram their kids at night and say, okay, well, what did that commie teacher tell you about Stalin? Let me tell you what the truth is about, you know, the West and capitalism. And to think that we might be in a similar situation without a Berlin Wall, you know, without bipolarity, but where we need to deprogram our kids. That's why I tell people, it's cool to work in the White House. Don't get me wrong. As an immigrant, it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool to be president. It's pretty cool to be a senator. But it's mostly irrelevant. I mean, the founding fathers were very clear. Federal government should be irrelevant. It should deal with two things, war and interstate trade. That's it. Alex de Tocqueville understood America better than anyone, of course, because he's a foreigner. And he said, where's the locus of power? Where's real America? It's locally. It's at the county commissioner. It's at the school board. That's why when you want to take back a country, that's where you take it back. Why is George Soros funding local school board races and local prosecutors at the county level? I mean, people like Fannie Willis. What the hell is the billionaire who broke the Bank of London doing funding local prosecutor races? Well, because that's how you steal a country. And we kind of just snoozed past it for 40 years. As bit by bit, the real locus of power at county, at a municipality level, was taken over. I mean, Tip O'Neill famously had this phrase in the 90s, the Democrat speaker. He said, politics is local. And it became this kind of bumper sticker for the Democrats. Oh, all politics is local. And we kind of laughed and said, oh, that's cute. Well, they actually meant it. They understood that you capture a nation not with a presidential election. You capture a nation. When I arrived to Virginia, I moved from Europe 2008, and we put our kids into the local schools. And we looked into the local, you know, school district, school board. There were 9 members of the school board. Every single one of them was a raving left-wing loony. And here's the important thing. None of them had a child in the public schools of the county. Wow. And you go, what? Then why are they running the board? Because it's about controlling my children, right? This is what we have to wake up to.
Dr. Sebastian Gorka, it's wonderful having you on. It's an honor. And I know you are, 3 hours a day, is it?
Three hours of live radio every day, and then a weekly TV show on Newsmax.
Well, on Salem Media Group, on Rumble, on Spotify, any place you want to watch it, all the links are on that link on Sebastian's Twitter feed at the top. So I appreciate your time. Thank you so much, Dr. Gorka.
Thank you. And check out my Substack, Sebastian Gorka, one word, sebastiangorka.substack.com.
We will put it in the description. Thank you so much.
If you like what we do, sign up to our mailing list. Donate, share, and subscribe to our many platforms at heartsofoak.org. Thank you for listening.